The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Rip Van Winkle would be the ideal stock market investor. Rip could invest in the market before his nap, and when he woke up 20 years later, he'd be happy. He would have been asleep through all the ups and downs in between. But few investors resemble Mr. Van Winkle. The more often an investor counts his money or looks at the value of his mutual funds in the newspaper, the lower his risk tolerance.
Mad Money Machine 44. Mad Money Machine. Saturday, October 21st.
Hi, everybody. Thanks very much for downloading. This is Paul Douglas Boyer with your Mad Money Machine. Welcome back. Coming up on this episode, I'll talk about 9 tips for investing in happiness. I'm going to talk about this Dow 12,000 bit. I'm going to tell you why I always say, who cares about the S&P 500 index? I'll review the progress of the Mad Money Machine Investment Guru Challenge. I've got a guru, I've got some tools, got some other fun stuff, and I'm going to talk some more about the Xbox 360. Hey, I got it working. Pretty sure they chopped up an Edgar Allan Poe book, put it in the blender, pulled out some words, and that's how they got the lyrics to the X-Ray Dogs' Alta Plaza. But it's fun to listen to anyway. You know, for the longest time, the lyrics to any Steely Dan song didn't make sense to me anyway. You have to go get a doctor's degree in Steely Dan to understand what they're talking about in a lot of their songs, too. Well, yeah, I did get the Xbox 360 working. Now, I want to thank Michael, who sent me an email that gave me encouragement to give it another try. He gave me 2 links to look at. One was how to fix the Media Center installation, and the other one was how to view DivX encoded files on the Xbox 360. And I am happy to report that I took a couple hours this Saturday and I went through all that stuff and got it working. It wasn't extremely simple to do, but it was fairly straightforward, I guess. And what a cool thing to be able to watch those videos now in my family room TV. And they look great, too, and they play back just fine. So thanks a lot, Michael. That was great. Article in the Wall Street Journal, October 8th. Going back a little bit. You know, Jonathan Clements' articles, I look forward to Wednesdays because that is when Jonathan Clements' articles entitled his column called Getting Going comes out. And on October 8th, his article is entitled 9 Tips for Investing in Happiness. He says, if you want to be happier, forget spending dollars and focus on how you spend your time. Sure, a bigger house and a fancier car might briefly put a smile on your face. Yet academic studies suggest that simply amassing more stuff won't bring you a permanent increase in your happiness. So what will? And he says he dug through some of the work done by economists and psychologists and came up with 9 tips. And number 1 is make time for friends. He says, according to a study done by Pew Research Center in Washington, he says the data suggests that making your friends a priority will have more bang for your buck than making your next promotion a priority. Number 2, in that same vein, forget the pay raise. He says while regularly hitting the town with friends will likely increase your happiness, you probably won't get the same boost from spending hours at the mall. Same thing happens when you get a pay raise. Soon enough, you're taking the extra money for granted and you're feeling dissatisfied again. Experts refer to this as hedonic adaptation or the hedonic treadmill. Number 3, don't trade up. He says once folks achieve a fairly basic standard of living, it takes a lot of additional money to bring about even a small increase in reported happiness. He says yet your income and wealth could still loom large if you start comparing yourself with those around you. Ah, remember that from Nassim Nicholas Taleb in Fooled by Randomness? Yeah, he talked about the same sort of thing. He said, if you move to a neighborhood you can barely afford, you would likely be disgruntled. And it says, there was a Professor Oswald who said, if you look out your window and see neighbors with lower incomes, you'll be happier. People are very keen to move into elite neighborhoods. They don't realize that they won't be as happy as they expect. It's the curse of being human. Number four, keep your commute short. I think that's obvious. Number five, count your blessings. He says, instead of obsessing over your neighbor's riches, try focusing on the riches you have, and that will likely make you feel happier. Number six, enjoy a good meal. In surveys, eating ranks as one of our favorite pastimes. Well, I know that all too well, and so does my chair. He says it's a relatively pleasant activity, and it satisfies a basic need. Professor Schrade, S-C-H-K-A-D-E, Schrade, notes. But if you aren't focused on it, you won't enjoy it as much. He says that's why the French enjoy their food more, and they're less likely to be doing something else at the same time. Number seven, challenge yourself. Leisure is more pleasurable than work, but you should also think about how you spend your leisure time. Since after a long day at the office, you might be inclined to stagger home and collapse in front of your new flat-screen TV, but the research suggests you'll be happier if you're more active. And number eight, volunteer. Oh, that's the key to the book, The Purpose-Driven Life, right? If you want to help yourself, try helping others by engaging in charitable activity. Not only does it make you feel valuable, but also you see other people doing good deeds, and that makes you feel better. Makes you realize the world can be a good place. And number nine, give it time. Surveys have found that reported happiness tends to be a U-shape throughout your life, with folks becoming increasingly grumpy as they approach their 40s, and then recovering from there. Wow, I must be at the bottom of the U. Maybe our happiness gradually declines if we fail to fulfill our youthful ambitions, only to revive it once we accept our lot in life. Alternatively, maybe this midlife unhappiness reflects the time pressures faced by those in their 40s as they juggle work and family. Whatever the reason, you're likely to grow happier as you grow older. Not sure any of the first eight tips will do the trick. Maybe you just need to give it time. Well, I like that article, and I like your columns, Jonathan Clements. Keep them coming, and I'll keep reading. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 10, risk capacity. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. We're getting there. It took me some time to figure out just how much risk to take with my investments. I've had to stop lying to myself, so I took my time on the risk capacity survey and got it right. I don't like to fight with active investments. I have finally come home. I'm trying to break out of this. I'm not sick anymore. Taking up all my time studying investments ain't working. I'll wake up and move on. I realize that I need to add some risk exposure to my portfolio. I'm tired of taking no chances. I'm going to make it happen now. I've been wasting a lot of time patching together an active portfolio. I'm tired of mending these fences. I'm going to make it happen now. Break off your lies. Take your time. Get it right. You're not alone. You don't like to fight. Nor do I. Let's do it right. Come on home. I'm trying to break out. Taking my time, ain't working. I'll wake up and move on. I'm tired of taking no chances. I'm gonna make it happen now. I'm tired of mending these fences. I'm gonna make it happen now. Investors are entitled to a level of return that matches their risk capacity. There are five dimensions for determining risk capacity. First, your time horizon and liquidity needs. Second, your attitude towards risk. Third, your net worth. Fourth, your income and savings rate. And finally, your investment knowledge. Your risk capacity can be determined by answering the questions in the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. If you've never asked yourself these questions, if you've never taken the Risk Capacity Survey, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me.
Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the barbell, and for the selected guru, I'll give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Machine Show number 44 is Aaron Brown. Aaron Brown is an executive director at the investment bank Morgan Stanley. He won the Wilmot Award in 2005 as Financial Educator of the Year for his speaking, writing, and activism. And he's the author of the book that I've almost finished reading called The Poker Face of Wall Street. Front flap of it says, although you probably don't want to think of your broker or investment bank as playing games with your hard-earned money, the fact is that gambling lies at the heart of economic ideas and institutions. Not surprisingly, the game most like the financial markets, poker, is hugely popular with financial professionals. This is an interesting book, and he does make a good case for all financial markets being basically gambling. In other words, injecting risk so that people can try to find a higher expected return. And guess who wrote the foreword to this book? Nassim Nicholas Taleb! Nassim says, you'd think that there's a distinction between economic risk-taking and gambling, one of them invested with respectability, and the other treated as a vice and a product of parasitic activity. This book shows that the distinction between what is called purely gambling and productive economic activity is one of those socially constructed ones that remains sticky in our minds. While many may disagree with the point, it remains that gambling injects currency into the economic life in the form of the expectation of future cash transfers, and that, and not just narrowly defined productive activities, may make the world advance. Well, he is right about that. The book really gives you a perspective about risk-taking. In the first couple of pages, Aaron Brown says, for most of history, there wasn't a big middle class. There were rich and poor. Life was risky for both, and everyone gambled. So in the book, he mixes up some certainly poker strategies, along with poker stories that he's had, along with investment and investment strategies and investment stories. And in talking about poker, one of the things he talks about is taxes. He says, because gambling is viewed as bad, the government taxes it in an extraordinary, inconsistent way. The sum of all gambling winnings for a year totaled over all winning sessions, rather than net of losses, is income and fully taxable. Gambling losses are deductible only up to the amount of winnings and only as an itemized deduction. The last basically means that if you have a relatively low income, you have to give up your exemption for basic living expenses to claim gambling losses. The deduction is most useful for taxpayers with big mortgages in states with high income taxes. And I think the bottom line of the argument he's making there is you can't just simply subtract your losses from your gains and then report the difference on your tax return. You have to first report all your gains and then separately take your losses as a deduction separately. So if you win $5 at the slot machine and you lose $5 at the slot machine, you've got to report the $5 you won and then try to deduct the $5 you lost, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a tax advisor, but I'm just trying to read what he said about the problem. Getting on to the main meat of the book, though. Later in the book, he's got a section called A Random Walk Down Wall Street, and he talks about risk denial number 6. We're not gambling, we're investing. He says later in the book that the development of the United States was funded by gambling. Wars, churches, universities, and public buildings were all paid for by lotteries. As the financial system evolved, businesses began to issue stocks and bonds instead. When stock market professionals finally embraced tools developed for gamblers, they needed a defense. They couldn't claim that people bought stock to hedge other naturally occurring risks in their lives. Instead, they claimed that the risk was inherent to economic activity, and the stock market simply allocated it to willing risk takers. He said, most of the risk experienced by market participants comes from short-term buying and selling of stocks with each other. Risk that has nothing to do with raising capital for businesses or indeed any economic activity. Young people who have the longest time horizon over which to diversify risk should slowly accumulate index funds, then slowly withdraw from them after retirement. In fact, most money is put into the stock market by older people. Until fairly recently, among people who owned stock, the most common number of companies held was one. He says, but in this case, practice is moving toward theory. Index fund investment is growing, and more young people are building up positions in the stock market. However, portfolios are still very far from what theoretical models advise, and the vast majority of research and news reporting about the stock market concerns the quest for undiversified short-term gains, hot tips, rather than diversified long-term returns. That makes no sense if the purpose of the stock market is to spread out unavoidable economic risk, but perfect sense if the purpose is to let people gamble. Well, the book isn't all about index funds. I mean, he has got one paragraph on it that I pulled out for you there. Later in the book, he talks about the importance of exchanges. He says, we can measure exchanges only when they involve money. The tips of the gifts in the gambling icebergs with dollar amounts attached each total over $1 trillion a year in the United States, compared to a $12 trillion money exchange economy. We can only guess how much of each is hidden. Some of the most important things in life are supposed to be bartered, but not bought or sold. We can earn respect, repay loyalty, and reciprocate affection, but not with or for money. Other things, such as love and friendship, can be given freely as gifts, but trading is socially discouraged. To see the relative value of these two spheres, consider the following choice. You could be transferred with all your friends and family, but no material goods, to an Earth-like planet somewhere in the galaxy. Or, you could remain behind as the last person on Earth, owner of all the material goods in the world. Although both are hard choices, the emigrants will have trouble surviving without skills or tools in their new environment, and most of the stay-at-home's assets will be useless without other people to run them. I think most people would immediately opt to leave rather than stay. Most people refuse to exchange the most important things in life for money. An ironic consequence of this is that we get less of these important things. Money exchange is more efficient than gift, gambling, barter, and theft. Because we refuse to put a dollar value on human life, society spends hundreds of millions of dollars to prevent some deaths and little or nothing to prevent others. A rational market would quickly find a market clearing price of human life, and we would have both fewer deaths and more resources to devote to other tasks. I don't know if that would be a better or a worse world. Well, he's got a lot of interesting ideas in this book, and I recommend you go to your library and pick up a copy. That's what I did. Well, there you have our guru for show 44, Aaron Brown. Hey, I've got a tool in the crib for you. Want to be a better stock picker? Or just want to see how well Jim Cramer's stock picks are doing? Go to caps.motleyfool.com. It operates from a simple premise. Working together, we can improve our investing results. The revolutionary new service pools the resources of the Motley Fool community to help you identify the best stocks at the best times to buy them and which stocks to avoid, too. Step 1. Players rate stocks. At the heart of CAPS are thousands of predictions. Players predict whether stocks will outperform or underperform the S&P 500 and over what time frame this will happen. We compile the data showing all the picks you've made and all the picks for individual stocks. Number 2, step 2, we keep score. As stocks change in value, we evaluate players' predictions. Players receive an accuracy percentage indicating how often they make correct predictions and a score, which is the percentage by which their picks beat the S&P 500. Step 3, players receive CAPS ratings. Based upon the performance of their picks, Caps players receive a percentile rating from 1 to 100. This rating indicates the percentage of people that the player is outperforming. The higher the rating, the better. Step 4, stocks receive caps ratings. A stock's caps rating is the aggregation of every prediction for that stock. The rating indicates whether or not the players think that stock will outperform the S&P 500. Important concept to follow. Pay attention. Here it is. Players with higher ratings have more influence on a stock's rating. If you're a great investor with a great track record, we think that you have what you have to say is very important, so we give you more weight. However, if you don't know the difference between a stock and a parking ticket, we're not going to allow you to affect the rating of a company very much. Step 5, caps gets smarter. Every caps rating is updated every 5 minutes. And with each additional prediction, caps recalculates and recompiles the data, constantly refining the community sentiment. Over time, the best investor will naturally work their way to the top and gain more influence over the stock ratings. Conversely, the less successful players will have less impact. The cycle repeats. Players make more predictions, and so on. This results in a service which will help you find better stocks and follow the best investors. Well, I think it's a fun premise, but I think what you'd find over a 20-year period, everybody would average out to 50%. But it's fun. If you go in and sign up for an account, a free account with caps.motleyfool.com, search for player named Track Jim Cramer. And what they actually do is they take his picks from Mad Money, and they put them in this tracking service. And so that's another way that we can track how well Track Jim Cramer is doing. At the moment, his rating is under 20, which I assume is 20 percentile. His accuracy is shown as 45.23%, which is slightly less than a coin flip. There you have it, our tool in the crib for show 44, Caps from Motley Fool. As with all the tools I've given you so far, this one's free. So you're thinking Dow 12,000 is a pretty big deal, huh? New high in the Dow. Well, not so fast. The actual Dow Jones Industrial Average needs to rise almost 20% from here to about 13,900 to offset inflation, even the weak inflation of the past 6 years. A buy and hold investor in the 30 Dow stocks can't be very happy unless he considers his other options. S&P and index investors need another 12% rise to get back to the old top of 1527 set in October 2000. That means the S&P 500 would need to surpass 1807, a 32% gain from here, to offset inflation. Others need still more. The benchmark S&P index beat two-thirds of actively managed mutual funds over the past 5 years. And the NASDAQ, he says a buy and hold investor in the NASDAQ index would be even with the all-time high adjusted for inflation if it were at 6,075. And the reason that I poo-poo the S&P 500 index is because if you take a look at the IFA Index 100 portfolio, it's got a lot better risk return than the S&P 500. That's the way we should benchmark investment returns. And in fact, there's a benchmarking tool available for you at IFA.com to compare the results of any other investment against this fantastic portfolio of diversified index funds. I just can't wait to give away a copy of this book, Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors, because I think if you go through each of the 12 steps, it'll convince you that passive investing is the best way to make the most money. So the question from last week was, what Cramer featured brand name blue chip stock should we buy to replace GM that we sold from the portfolio SmackDown? And do you have any other recommendations of stocks to sell and replace with one of Cramer's hot stocks? And I said if you called in, I'd give you two votes, two chances in the drawing. And I got one caller from Mark.
Hey, Paul, how's it going? This is Mark calling from West Point, New York. Hey, first off, just want to say keep up the great work. Love the podcast. And regarding the question, Oh, Kramer really is hot on tech right now, and, you know, I like Apple and Microsoft myself, but I think if you want to add something to the portfolio SmackDown, let's go ahead and go with Riverbed Technologies. He says if you like Cisco, you'll love Riverbed, and he talks about its licensing deals with Hewlett Packard and Mac Data and so on and so forth. But it's Riverbed Tech, symbol RVBD, and throw it out there. We'll see how it does. He says we're getting in at the ground floor. Hey, also, if you like Lost, like I do, and I can't wait to see Jack and Sawyer fight over some strawberry shortcake, I think you'd like to check out this movie. It's called Primer, and it was made on about a $7,000 budget, won a couple of Sundance Film Festivals, and I think it ties into your theme of buying tomorrow's or having tomorrow's newspaper today. Don't go out there Googling it and looking up some spoilers. Just go out and rent it at your local Blockbuster or wherever you get movies from, Netflix or wherever. Maybe you can even download it from iTunes. But it's called Primer, P-R-I-M-E-R, and I think you'll like it. All right, take care, and good luck pushing that button, Law style, each and every day you do there for the SmackDown. All right, thanks, Paul.
Mark, it's interesting you'd mention that movie, Primer. Listen to what I had to say on show number 8. There's another time loop movie that came out in 2004 called Primer, science fiction movie, where the guys did buy stocks, however. Now, before you rush out and rent Primer and spend the 77 minutes with it, you need to know that it's not your typical movie. It's very hard to follow because they invent this time machine and thing and end up making copies of themselves running at different places at different times, so it gets real messy. But I thought it was a thought-provoking nonetheless. Yeah, that show was show number 8, Groundhog Day. And it came out, well, right around Groundhog Day. And I may have to rent Primer again sometime. That was a very interesting movie to watch. Well, thank you for your entry. Although, you know, I wouldn't consider that a brand name blue chip stock, but I'll enter you in the drawing anyway. Rob said, I know Jim C. is hot on tech right now. He's really pushing Google, yeah, and he was right about Google. But I wouldn't call it a blue chip. How about Apple? I know he'd like Cisco as well. Good show as always. Mojo Jojo 103, who won before, says, I like GD as a replacement. He says, I just watched the season premiere of Lost on my TiVo the other night. Now what? Now I'm really lost. What the heck is going on that show? I like it to watch it, but I don't have a clue what's going on week to week. you probably have to watch one of the catch-up shows on that. Bo Dot Dot says, the blue chip I would add is the one Kramer simply cannot talk about. GE. Well, you know, I won't add GE because Kramer won't talk about it. This is the Kramer portfolio. Radar 96 says Costco should replace GM. Vancouver Washington 1 says I'd replace it with Cummins, CMI. That's had a big run this year. We did own it earlier in the year and sold it for a nice gain, but not enough. Keku writes in, doesn't have a stock pick, so I can't enter you in the drawing, unfortunately. It says, guys, you really need to improve your show. If you can cut some crap out of your show and make it to the point, it would be great. 15 minutes, you guys talk 5 minutes. Breaks and slow speech and 10 minutes, useless ads. I don't know. Ho rated this podcast second best, with pace sounds like second worst. and then Oz writes, I think Cat is a good stock to replace. Yeah, but then Oz later wrote in and said, nope, Kramer said sell Cat, so we couldn't put that in the portfolio. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take Marks, and I'm going to put him in at position 1 and 5. And then everybody else gets spread around in there. And go out to random.org, and I put in a value of 1 to 8. And the winner was 7. And that translates into Van Siwa 1, Vancouver, Washington 1. Congratulations. Send me your address, and I'll send you a copy of this book. Everybody else, go ahead and go out and buy a copy right now. Let's give another book away. Let's just go ahead and give another book away. And this one is going to be the easiest possible giveaway. I know the last one was a little hard because you had to actually watch Kramer and you had to know a little bit about blue chip stocks and so forth. This one's going to be the easiest one of all. And that is just make a comment at madmoneymachine.com in the show notes of this show, show 44. And if you can't figure out how to put a comment in the show notes for show 44, then you're not entered. I guess it is hard after all. All you need to do is register. There's a register link right at the top of madmoneymachine.com. It'll ask you for your email address. And no, I'm not going to spam you to death. Maybe five a year. I've only sent out one so far. And just enter a comment then in the show notes of show 44, and you will be entered to win in the drawing by the next show. And when's the next show going to be? You know, I'm not too sure now that I'm so heavily invested into my day job, but I'll keep you updated on the website. Just keep subscribed in iTunes and you'll get it automatically. Well, that's going to do it for show 44. I sure appreciate you listening. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing your risk capacity to make a mad money machine. Another thing I'd appreciate is if you would go out to IFA.com and show our sponsors here a little love. Index Funds Advisors, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Here's the entire song from Turtlebox now, No Chances, from GarageBand.com.
I'm tired of mending these fences.
Thanks so much for listening. This is Paul Douglas Boyer on the Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next time.